Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg.
Spain are the world champions at last.
A division of Bell Media.
You're listening to a special summer edition of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You know, I could think of a lot better things to do with this ice.
On Sports Radio 1290.
p.m. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Special thanks to Richard's girlfriend for voicing over that ice commentary during the last little bumper there. We appreciate her giving of her time like that.
Who's that band, Drew?
That's your brother's band, Richard. Yeah. The Patty Cakes performing live audio from their show this past last Tuesday, was that right? Two Tuesdays ago?
Yeah.
Whatever day Richard showed up for work hungover the
no,
next day.
No, I was good.
Well, there you go. That's surprising. Welcome back to ye olde Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Taming the Drew.
Welcome back. We've heard from Kevin Cheveldayoff in the first hour. In case you missed any of the show so far, you can download it on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe. Get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Always be on the website, www.illegalcurve.com. And you can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/illegalcurve.
Sorry, some other activity in the southeast.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what I was going to say. Let's go through some of our, we have a whole new list of, I guess, rivals for this one season. It's going to be a little bizarre. But, a lot of moves being done in the southeast division this past week. So why don't we go through a few of them and see what some of the people we're going to see most often this year have been up to. Let's start in Carolina. They had probably not the biggest of the moves, but the most expensive of the moves. They signed Thomas Cabrelle.
I finally got a prediction right, by the way.
Did you say Carolina?
In my ESPN article, I had to predict for all five teams in the division.
Hang on. 7:04 p.m., okay. He made his first ESPN reference.
I haven't referenced it in months.
Richie, aren't you nominated for an ESPY?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Anyways, I had to predict all... I'm going to be full disclosure. I had to predict a player to sign with each team.
Yeah.
And that was the only one I got right, but Cabrelle to Carolina. And I think part of the reason is Rutherford's relationship with Cabrelle's brother,
Franisek. Yeah. Is he still on this?
No, but just the experience with him, and
right.
He could speak.
He won a cup with him in 06.
Yeah, he left. He came in early 2000s, left, came back.
Where is he now?
What is this, the end of a Steve Simmons column?
I don't know.
At the end of every Sunday column, he writes, "Where is blank?"
Oh.
Whatever happened to.
Well, seriously,
I don't know. I don't have him on Facebook.
That I don't believe. Ezzy, you might have him on Facebook. Anyways, Thomas Cabrelle, a three-year contract in Carolina, $12.75 million. Average annual value of $4.25 million. Who would you rather have, Thomas Cabrelle or James Wisniewski?
I would rather have...
Drew, that's an absolutely great question.
Can I say neither? But that's a lot of money to throw at Thomas Cabrelle. First of all, when you're
$4.25 million.
Did you watch the playoffs, Drew? Oh yeah, you did, and you thought Cabrelle was good. In my opinion, he was terrible.
I don't think he was that bad, as bad as people thought he was.
He was terrible.
For the first,
it's a lot of money to throw at him. In my opinion, at his age. But once again, that's my opinion. I think the Jets are going to make the playoffs. You don't. So
okay, let me speak a couple of things. You know, the Columbus idea, Drew, that he would be a fit as opposed to Wisniewski, I agree with. Now, granted, the biggest difference between the two of them, Wisniewski has a howitzer of a slap shot, and this is no way justifying his contract. Howitzer of a slap shot, Cabrelle never shoots. So there's a difference there in terms of, you know, their strengths and weaknesses. Cabrelle to me at $4.25 million for a three-year contract, a modest three-year deal. I really think this is a good signing by Carolina. The key is, if you look at Carolina's forwards, guys, a lot of speed.
Yeah.
And when you have speed and you have guys in the back end that can transition the puck quickly up the ice, like Cabrelle.
That's what he's known for, a great first pass.
He's great first pass. He's a great passer.
I hope he can make a first pass. He's a defenseman.
But that's one of his biggest assets is what he can do with the puck out of his own zone and in the neutral zone. That was one of the biggest things I noticed with the Bruins in the finals. Cabrelle's neutral zone passes were tremendous. Tape to tape, quick reads right there. You look at Carolina's roster. Him and Pickering can move the puck both very well.
Yeah.
And again, guys, they're not locking up huge term on the back end. Pickering and Cabrelle are 4.5 and 4.25 respectively on three-year deals. You add in a tough defender like Tim Gleason. You know, you have Brian Allen, not the most mobile, but you complement each other. Jamie McBain can move the puck a bit. It's a quietly good team. I like the move. I think it's a good move.
It's a contract where, you know, when it expires 3 years from now, you're likely to have other, your other defensemen probably will have developed into being able to take Cabrera's role.
Ryan Murphy is drafted, right?
That's right. So, I mean, it's a contract that is good for the here and now, but it's also intelligent for going forward.
It's a bit of an overpay.
It's not. I mean, I know that you're just trying to rile me up, but I it's not an overpay.
Hey, Drew,
given the market for lousy defensemen and what they're making, it's not an overpay.
Think about what Burke was holding out for Cabrera for so long. What, one bad playoffs and a bad stint in Boston for a system that didn't really mesh with his skills?
I mean, Thomas Cabrera in Carolina just seems like it's a smart...
It's a match made in heaven.
That's why I picked it. It fit. To me, it fit beforehand.
That's right. It just fits. Yeah. Like, you look at it and you say, there's everything about that signing, mm-hmm. from the contract and the terms mm-hmm. to the team to everything, is a logical move.
And, Drew, what Brian Burke said, he obviously didn't say this. This is going to be a joke. If the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit. And Cabrera didn't fit in Toronto, so he acquitted.
That's not even funny. That's a terrible joke.
It's kind of funny.
Moderately funny.
But there's no glove involved, really.
There's hockey gloves, Drew.
That's
terrible. I really need to go back to the workshop.
Yeah, really bad, awful. Staying with Carolina, they traded Joe Corvo to Boston.
Joe Corvo stinks.
For a fourth-round pick.
Corvo,
that's funny. You say he stinks. And then, some of the people we follow on Twitter, and these aren't yahoos for the most part. Yeah. They're relatively intelligent hockey people. Seem to like that move for Boston.
There's intelligence.
Oh, for Boston, I like. I mean, when I say stink, I'm exaggerating, obviously. Joe Corvo brings a lot of the same attributes to the table as Thomas Cabrera does. I don't think he does them as well. He's equally soft on the boards. He can skate pretty well, just like Cabrera can. His passing skills are good, but not as good as Cabrera's. He's got a better shot than Cabrera. So, yeah, he brings a lot of the same attributes. I think Cabrera is an introvert, not necessarily a bad locker room guy. I question if Corvo's a bad locker room guy. I'm of the opinion that he wouldn't be a guy that would fit Winnipeg's criteria, put it that way.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you basing that on anything?
Richie's done a psychological analysis of the
guy
two.
And signed for big money in Ottawa.
Yeah.
Bailed because there was too much pressure.
Yeah.
He's been bounced around a couple times, Carolina, Boston. I think it was Carolina. Is this his second or third time on Carolina?
It seems like he plays for Carolina and Boston, both teams, every year.
He's bounced around a bit. To be honest, Drew, if Corvo can't handle the pressure in Ottawa, and I know Ottawa's a bigger fishbowl than Boston. Boston has a lot of pressure.
In Ottawa. I think there's more pressure in Boston than there is in Ottawa.
So if that's the case, and he left Ottawa because of the pressure. Well, have fun.
I think he's going to be relied on for a different role in
Ottawa.
It
doesn't matter. When Ottawa went to the Cup, their top pairing was Redden and Mezeros.
Yeah.
And their second pairing was Phillips and Volchenkov. And their third pairing was Pricing and Corvo. So thinking about it that way, he was a third pairing defenseman. He wasn't counted on for that much.
Right. That's fair. We touched on Anthony Stewart signing in Carolina. 2 years, $1.8 million, $900,000 average annual value. He's going to be a young player. 2 years, it's just minimal risk there for.
It's a good move.
Yeah,
yeah, Richie. When we were last on the air, Vokoun hadn't been signed yet.
Oh God.
I'm stealing your thunder a little bit here, Drew. And
you,
we talked.
You hosting the show
on,
too?
On Saturday? We talked about the Capitals' moves, and I said that a few of them were mediocre. Joel Ward and Hamrlik. Richie agreed, especially with Hamrlik. The two moves they've made here, I really love. Vokoun. I'm going to go on the record here, and I might be wrong about a few things, but Thomas Vokoun was the best signing that was made.
Oh,
period. My opinion.
As if you really want my role, you have to tell the terms of the deal and everything for our audience. 1 year, $1.5 million. Thomas Vokoun signs in Washington. George McPhee today looks like a genius.
Yeah, I mean, he looks like as big of a genius as Greg Sherman looks like a
fool.
Fool.
That's just it. I mean, you look can only be as smart as the person who's stupid you're trading with.
But even that signing, even with Varlamov under contract, even if he went to the KHL, Thomas Vokoun is going to be as good value as you're going to get for a netminder. Let me put it into perspective, Drew. Okay?
Okay.
The Philadelphia Flyers signed Ilya Bryzgalov to a 9-year deal.
$51 million.
Why?
And...
Well, we've already
Washington signed Thomas Vokoun to a 1-year, $1.5 million deal. There's very little difference in terms of skill set between the two netminders, and the amount of money signed for is how much?
I'll tell you what the difference between Vokoun and Bryzgalov is.
What's that?
Vokoun's a winner. He may not have won with Florida because nobody could win with that lineup in front of him, but he won in the World Championships.
I mean, maybe he has, maybe he hasn't, Drew, but in terms of skill...
There's certainly not an $8 million gap between the two of them, that's for sure.
Eight-year gap.
Yeah, mean, an eight-year gap. That's sort of
a $50 million.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
It's absolutely absurd. Is this the same National Hockey? Are these two general managers managing in the same climate? Because that's what I'm wondering.
Well, Brizgalov didn't want to come to our climate and didn't like the park situation, so it doesn't make any sense. That was probably, you know, on the flip side, Vokoun at 1 year at $1.5 million, Richie, was an amazing signing, possibly the best. I just said it was. Brizgalov, I think, in addition to Erhoff, was the worst. You know what? All the jokes aside about Brizgalov not wanting to come to Winnipeg, giving him 9 years, yes, he's been a Vezina finalist, I think, two or three times now. He's a great goalie, and, you know, we were talking about this on Saturday, might have been the only reason, Drew, why the Phoenix Coyotes were competing on a nightly basis. 9 years, though, is absolutely ridiculous. It's not even the money. It's the amount of years they gave him. He doesn't deserve it. Did Martin Brodeur ever get a nine-year deal or an eight-year deal? No. So why should Brizgalov?
Look, we've talked about Brizgalov signing. We all agreed it was ridiculous from the start. Look, fans might not know that much about Thomas Vokoun because they don't watch Florida. You never get to see Florida or in years past. But you think general managers would know about Thomas Vokoun.
I wrote an article about Thomas Vokoun in the middle of the year about the couple teams that could be interested in his services. One of them was Colorado, who, for whatever reason,
traded their future
didn't
for
offer
Varlamov.
Him anything.
Yeah, and traded their future for Semyon Varlamov.
One was Toronto, who is staking their, who doesn't seem to want to rebuild, and yet they're staking their wagon to James Reimer, who's seems like you wouldn't mind another veteran presence in there.
Well, I tell you what, I would want Thomas Vokoun at $1.5 million.
You'd want Thomas
over Jonas Gustafsson.
You'd want Thomas Vokoun at $4 million over what they have right now,
and
takes the pressure off Reimer.
Yeah,
that's another one. Another one was Tampa Bay.
Yeah,
who just signed Rolison. Now Tampa Bay is probably kicking themselves because Vokoun's a better goaltender than Rolison.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the, and there's one other team, and I forget who the other team was. But think about that perspective. The goalie market wasn't great. Yeah, Brizgalov got that contract, and Vokoun got it. Weird to me, Drew. I know we have to go to the other teams. It's very weird to me that these two players were signed within a week and a half of each other.
Well, look, the Philadelphia signing of Brizgalov, when you compare it to the market, just doesn't make any logical sense. So you can't. It's an outlier. I mean, it just doesn't make. You can't look at it rationally and try and figure it out why it happened.
Any other quick signings?
There's some more. We'll get
Troy Brower.
Troy Brower's. He was acquired by Washington.
He was
an RFA. 2 years, $2.35 million per year.
I know we have to go to break, but he's a must sign, Drew, because you gave up a first round pick for him. Now your first round pick for him is so much more easy to stomach because you got a first round pick back now.
You traded the 28th overall pick in the first round for what's likely to be. I expect it to be a top five pick for Washington this coming season.
Top 10 pick.
Top five, top 10. I mean, yeah. We've just debated it before.
Drew, we got to go to break, but that's one guy that, especially considering he was coming from Chicago where Cheval Dayoff was, I wonder if True North was interested in him. That's a guy that could fit in on your third line.
Oh, he's a third liner. Yeah, he's a third line and winger. Before we go to break, Drew, we're now available. You can listen to us on your smartphone.
That's right. The Bell Media app on your BlackBerry or on your iPod. Go to the appropriate app world and download the Bell Media, listen on the go sort of app, and you can listen to us whenever we're on the air, even if you're not in the car or not near your radio. Technology's great, isn't it?
Well, Drew.
Yeah.
When you discovered the BlackBerry 160.
Drew Montague.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Mike Greenlay, the analyst for the Minnesota Wild television broadcast, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hawk Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 7:17 in the evening here on Sports Radio 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Richard Pollock. Michael Remus is operating the R desk at www.illegalcurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve. Follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And, of course, remember to download the program on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Let's welcome to the program Mike Greenlay. He's the color analyst for Minnesota Wild TV. Mike, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Hey, good to be back. How are you guys doing?
Doing very well. Thanks for joining us again. How are you doing?
Doing very well.
A very busy offseason so far for the Minnesota Wild. I think every week they make a blockbuster trade. Let's start with the first trade first, that being the Brent Burns deal. What were your thoughts when that trade went down?
I was very pleased that we got so much for Brent Burns, because obviously he's a talent and he's a guy that'll command a lot of money next year. And so not only do you save a pretty big cap hit over the next, I don't know how many years that he'll probably end up signing for at the end of next year when he's unrestricted, but not only do you save that money, but you also get a bona fide shooter in Setoguchi, you get a first round pick, and you get a prospect. And I mean, you know, they're just spreading the wealth a little bit more. I mean, you get three guys that you hope ultimately can help your team. And I just think that's the way the NHL is going. Granted, there are some players that are, game changers. Brent Burns can be, and he has been at times. He hasn't always been. But I still like the fact that they spread the wealth a little bit, got three players for the one, and also, save themselves a big dollar amount coming up next year.
Certainly did seem like good value, Mike. Can you talk about Brent Burns' tenure as a member of the Wild? You know, he came up, drafted him out of the CHL, and he had played some forward and some defense, and it took a little while for him to get going under Jacques Lemaire. But how would you grade his overall performance during his time in Minnesota?
You know, he matured a lot coming here. I mean, he was 18 years old when he started in the National Hockey League, and you know, there's people that'll argue that that was a mistake anyway. But bottom line is that he matured. He's gotten better. He's had his injuries. He's had his problems in that regard. But I still think he's a superstar defenseman. He's got superstar qualities. He's got quarterback qualities for power plays. He's got he's got all the elements of a very good player. And if he matures a little bit more as a person and as a player, more so as a player, but he's gonna make a team very happy. And I think, like I said, there's nothing against Brent Burns, but you're putting all your eggs in one basket again, and you only can do that so many times on one team. Put your eggs in one basket with Brent Burns, and you have to ask yourself where you want to put all those eggs. So I think the Wild, given the fact that they have a lot of young, talented prospects on defense, they said, well, let's spread the wealth on defense. Let's get, we're happy with our core, and let's get some meaningful players and prospects for Brent Burns. And they did so, and I think it was a pretty good move.
You know, Michael and I were in St. Paul for the NHL entry draft, and when they announced the Brent Burns to San Jose trade, you know, some people were a little bit surprised, some people were very surprised. But as far as the Heatley for Havlat trade goes, I mean, how surprised were you, especially after the fact that Brent Burns was traded, you know, days earlier?
Well, I guess you take a couple blue chip players and you trade them, but you know, they didn't trade them for guys that weren't blue chippers or couldn't be. I mean, that's the point. I think the other trade we just talked about, the Burns trade, I think that was trading one big name for a few guys that could really help you in the future, and some right now, obviously with Setoguchi. But I think the other part of that, they have left for Heatley, I think that's giving two guys that are, you know, maybe not performing at the level that they should. Not that they're performing poorly by any means, but I mean, you know, give them a new outlook somewhere. Maybe they wasn't the right fit for either guy in either place, and you move them into a different spot, and then maybe they flourish. I think Heatley's unbounded in his talent. He's obviously one of the top goal scorers since he's been in the league, power play and regular shift. And Marty Havlat's just a terrific playmaker, a terrific puck handler and skater. The thing is, the Wild had plenty of passers and puck carriers. I mean, Mikko Koivu likes to carry the puck. Pierre-Marc Bouchard likes to carry the puck. Matt Cullen likes to carry the puck. You know, we've got a lot of carriers, a lot of passers, a lot of feeders. Needed some shooters. We look at the Wild's goal production and shot production in the last few years, and it's been terrible. They need guys who can shoot the puck and that want to score. And I think Heatley and Setoguchi are two guys that fit that bill. So, you move some players for that. But I think every team's got to address areas that they need to address. And for the Minnesota Wild, I think it's terrific to make moves to get yourself thing up front like they did.
We're joined on the line by Mike Greenlay. He's the color analyst for Minnesota Wild TV broadcast. Mike, Mikko Koivu is an exceptional passer. Danny Heatley is a top-notch goal scorer. Are they a perfect match for one another and the Minnesota Wild organization?
I'm certainly hoping so. I mean, obviously personalities have to mesh, and you know, leadership qualities have to come out in both of them, and you know, a lot of chemistry things have to happen. But you know, I think they said I don't know Danny Heatley personally. I've met him obviously a few times just in the business, but you know, he's from what I've heard, he's a nice, conscientious kid, and he's a terrific talent. And Mikko Koivu, I do know fairly well, and I think that they'll work together. I think Heatley's excited. At least he says he is. He says he's dedicated to working out and getting in the best shape of his career. And Mikko Koivu is, you know, taking this team as a captain and trying to get them into the playoffs. I mean, I think he wants to, as a captain, take the team into the postseason, which he hasn't done. So, you know, that's a goal for him, too. I think they'll work together. I think they'll work, in unison to try and help each other out. And if not, I mean, you know, like I said, you've got two top lines, so... You know, you can move players around and see what fits. We don't know what's going to fit. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Pierre-Marc Bouchard in there. You got Lautan Dress in there. You got a few other guys that you can deal with. And I think that's the fun of training camp is you throw a few guys together, see if they mesh. You know, move them around a bit, try them again later on. I mean, it's just a little bit of a mix. A mixing bowl. Throw them in there and see if it works. Sure. And if it does, you run with it. You know, if it doesn't, you make some tweaks and see how that works. So, it's all an experiment.
Yeah, exactly. Mike, you talk about styles and styles meshing. I think sometimes an underrated part of the game is the two players clicking. Martin Havlat was essentially brought in to replace Marian Gaborik. Was it just looking back at Havlat's tenure, obviously a shorter one than Brent Burns, was that just a matter of Havlat kind of being on a team with, as you mentioned, a bunch of puck carriers and just his style not necessarily meshing with the key centers being Koivu and Cullen this past year?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, like I said, we got into a thing where you had a lot of passers and a lot of puck carriers and not a lot of guys that could finish. I mean, all due respect to Antti Miettinen. I mean, if it had been anyone else there that was a shooter and that was a scorer, that he would have twice as many goals as Miettinen did on that Brunette-Koivu line. And you know, with Lautan Dress, I mean, the problem is Lautan Dress got hurt last year. He was only, for the half year that he did play, he was amazing with Havlat. Unfortunately, he pretty much missed all of last season.
Right.
And so Havlat didn't have the benefit of having someone to feed it to on that side because, you know, Pierre-Marc Bouchard, again, can be a shooter at times, but he's more of a playmaker. So I'm not saying Marty Havlat didn't get a fair shake. He just didn't have maybe the right combination of people to deal with. So, you know, it's a little bit of everything.
Mike, do you think Wild General Manager Chuck Fletcher is done with off-season transactions? And if so, as the team is constructed now, do you think this is for sure a playoff team?
I think it can be. I don't know if he's done. He probably is because, you know, obviously you can always fill a spot. They also got Powell from Philadelphia, so he'll be a good grinding guy on the third line maybe or fourth or whatever. But the fact is that, you know, the team's made some serious moves. You don't want to make too many, otherwise you don't have any recognition of what your team looks like. So, I think it's important that some stability falls into place a little bit. I think that there's not really much else you could do. I mean, you don't want to, you know, obviously in order to get something, you got to give something. And I think the Wild gave up two pretty good players, two blue chippers, as I said. They got good players back, but you don't want to keep, you know, changing the face of the team too much. If Chuck sees something that makes his team better and he doesn't have to give up a lot, naturally any GM would make a move. But I don't know if the plan right now is to keep juggling because I think we've got a pretty good mesh right now.
Mike, last question. Just under 2 weeks ago, the entire hockey world was focused on the Minneapolis-St. Paul area with the NHL draft. You know, how was the draft experience? Did the fans, you know, respond as excitedly as we would expect?
I think so. I think it was a lot of fun. Everyone, there was different venues to go do things and to see people talk and roundtable discussions, and they were pretty full. So, you know, the thing about Minnesota, when the All-Star game was here, they kind of clamored and they loved it. You know, their draft is here. You know, if there's an outdoor game eventually, they'll have people all over the place. So, you know, they love their hockey from every level, and they certainly thought the draft was pretty cool, and I think it was certainly a resounding success.
Mike, were you able to deal with all the new Jets fans coming to Minneapolis and St. Paul and taking over?
I love it. I love it. I was sitting two sections down from all the crazies there. It was great. It was fun. If that's a microcosm of what they're going to be like in the regular season, I welcome it because that's certainly a lot of fun to have Winnipeg back in the league. I mean, I grew up watching the Jets, and my dad and his family are all from Porter's La Prairie and the Winnipeg area. So it's like, you know, it's certainly a kind of a neat thing to have them back. And I know Winnipeg won't be on for you. Well, I know Winnipeg won't be like Atlanta, where they get a second crack and don't make it go like Atlanta did. So.
Yeah, and after this odd season, it's likely that the Wild and the Jets will start a long-term rivalry, and we all look forward to that.
Yeah, you never know. With some divisional swapping and everything like that, it could be interesting. And, yeah, that would be fun.
Exactly. Mike Greenlake, a color commentator for the Minnesota Wild TV broadcast. Thanks again for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
You bet. Anytime.
Take care, Mike. Thanks a lot, Mike. Let's head to break. When we come back, Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Shortly past 7:30, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I am your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Michael Remus is operating the R-Desk. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and of course the website www.illegalcurve.com. Let's go to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
How you doing, guys?
Doing very well. How about yourself, Randy?
Everything's good.
That's what we like to hear. Randy, some big acquisitions, some big trades in the San Jose Sharks organization. Really, for the first time, they've started to give up some of their young talent. They gave up Devin Setoguchi, young player. They gave up Charlie Coyle, last year's first-round pick. They gave up this year's first-round pick. Is that emblematic of a win-now mentality that is being adopted in San Jose?
I think so. I think it started already last year when they decided not to bring Yevgeny Nabokov back. They have long been a franchise that has followed the roadmap of drafting and developing, and I'm not saying that they've abandoned that for sure, but certainly there's been a turn in their strategy here, beginning with Nabokov's leaving and Niemi becoming the goaltender, and then the acquisitions that they've made in the last couple of weeks here. So certainly I think there's a window for the Sharks if you are considering the window that includes Joe Thornton, Patrick Marleau, Dan Boyle. Those three players, who obviously make up a big part of the core, are locked up for the next 3 years or so, give or take a year here and there. Throw Joe Pavelski and Ryan Clough in there as well. So it's time to push to the next level, and for the Sharks, that's to get to the Stanley Cup and then hopefully try and win it. So I think they've decided they're going for it, even though they've indicated that in the past, even more so now.
Sharks' Achilles heel, Randy, is could have been defense over the past few years, and they've really solidified their top four with Brent Burns. Moving forward, do you see Burns pairing up with Mark-Edward Vlasic, or do you see him pairing up with Douglas Murray, or regardless, is that just a luxury they never had before?
Well, yeah, they didn't have that luxury in quite the same way. You know, if I'm just going to project going into training camp, you'd probably defense pairs of Boyle and Murray, because they played so well last year together and have that understanding. And then you would probably have Vlasic paired up with Brent Burns. And then it would be Justin Braun probably with Jason Demers, and then Jim Vandermeer. So there's your 7D, and I'm sure there'll be some moving around here or there. But it gives the coaching staff, Todd McLellan, a lot more flexibility than they've had in the past. It gives them that big shot from the point from Brent Burns that they had when Rob Blake was there.
Right.
But really haven't been able to replace in the last 2 years. So that is going to be key. And it'll also take some of the minutes pressure off the Boyle-Murray pairing. Right. Brent Burns is capable of playing big minutes. And, you know, at Boyle's age, it probably won't hurt if he plays a minute or two less next year.
It's interesting because, in the playoffs, Detroit talked about how they tried to put the puck into the San Jose, in the corners where the San Jose defenders weren't great at moving the puck. It seems like San Jose is shoring up weakness after weakness, and that's going to be an impossible task coming next year.
Well, on paper it all looks good, and I think the moves have been good so far. And another key weakness was the penalty kill last year, and it hadn't been for probably 5 years before that. It had been one of their real strengths, but penalty killing was a problem in the regular season, and then it reared its head against the Canucks in round three. And the addition of Michael Hanzus is going to be key there. He led the Kings in shorthanded ice time last year. He's a big body, excels in the penalty kill role. So that's another one of the areas of need that I think they addressed in a big way.
Randy, the Heatley-Havlat trade, it came out of left field for many of us. Were you surprised by it?
Well, I was, number one, because I didn't know that Danny Heatley had a window in his contract where he could be traded. Mm-hmm. We were all under the impression that it was a no-trade, no-move contract, which it was, with the exception of that brief window on July 1st when he could submit a list of 10 places he didn't want to go. And then there were 20 or 19, I guess, other places that he could be traded. That was all, you know, information that just never got out, and that includes to us. So from that standpoint, that he moved at all was a surprise because we thought it would require him agreeing to move. And why would he want to leave San Jose at this point in his career? So very surprising in that regard, but not surprising that the Sharks made the move when you consider all the factors.
You know, we had Mike Greenlay on just a segment before, Randy, talking about how Martin Havlat's style didn't necessarily mesh with, you know, with Mikko Koivu. Do you see a similar issue possibly with Thornton, and maybe the team foresees Havlat locking in with a guy like Joe Pavelski, a little more of a shooter?
Well, I mean, if I was going to project the opening day lines, Havlat wouldn't be on Thornton's line. Couture would be with Marlowe. That'll probably be the Sharks' top line in training camp, and I'm not Todd McClellan. I'm not suggesting I know his lineup or anything, but just looking at the way things unfolded last year, you would obviously move Pavelski back up to the second line now, and he would probably play with Klo and Havlat. So, but that doesn't mean that Thornton's not going to be on the ice with Martin Havlat. You know, I don't see Martin Havlat enough to say that he didn't mesh well with Koivu. Obviously, Mike does, so he has some insight there. And whether or not that translates to somebody like Joe Thornton, I just don't know. But obviously, a lot of work went into this deal from the Sharks' standpoint of scouting Martin Havlat over the last couple of years. You know, Doug Wilson said he's been on their radar for a while. And when the opportunity came there to make the deal, they were pretty confident that he's going to fit in. He sort of strikes you as one of those guys who really, I don't want to say has underachieved, but, you know, in, four of the last 5 years, he hasn't been in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And when he has been in the playoffs, he's been an excellent point producer in the playoffs. That's something that that Danny Heatley struggled with over the last 2 years, so hopefully that part of it will work well for the Sharks. And, you know, I wouldn't be at all surprised as well now that Heatley will clearly be the go-to guy in Minnesota, that his numbers will improve as well over his 26 goals this year.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're tuned to Sports Radio 1290, and we're joined by Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks.
Randy, we want to stick on Danny Heatley just for 1 second, and we'd like it if you could rate Danny Heatley's tenure in San Jose, because it was a short tenure, but, you know, maybe instead of giving, a letter grade, maybe talk about what was really successful about Danny Heatley's tenure in San Jose, and then maybe what didn't go so well for him.
Well, you know, I think that his transition to San Jose was a great one for the Sharks and for Danny, especially in the aftermath of the way he left Ottawa and all the national furor over not only him leaving there, but also not going to Edmonton.
You have to assume Ottawa and Edmonton were on the list of no places he wouldn't be traded to.
Yeah, there's a real good chance that was two of your top ten there. But, you know, it was year one, 39 goals. You know, while that was, it was actually exactly the same number that he had scored his last year with Ottawa. It wasn't the 50 that we, you know, thought he'd be capable of playing with Joe Thornton. I know some people even talked, when Heatley came to San Jose, it could have been a 60-goal year for Danny Heatley. That didn't happen, obviously. Year one, you know, the Sharks went to the conference final, and Danny's point total wasn't horrible, 13 in 14 games, but he scored only 2 goals in 14 playoff games. This past regular season, he played all but two of the games, but the goals dropped from 39 to 26. And then in the playoffs, the Sharks played 18 games, and Danny scored only 3 goals. So I think that's where you really look at the trade, and did it work out for the Sharks? Was Danny Heatley prolific in the playoffs? This year, he was really banged up near the end, playing with an injured hand. But 5 playoff goals in 2 years from your highest-paid offensive player, who has the reputation of being a goal scorer and a sniper, that's just not, I'm sure, the production that Danny hoped to bring. He's a very proud guy. He's a total pro. It's not the production, obviously, Doug Wilson and Todd McClellan hoped for either. So, you know, it's kind of it's a middling kind of experience with Danny Heatley. It wasn't horrible. It wasn't great. Both sides hopefully will benefit from Danny moving on to Minnesota.
Lost in the shuffle of all the big trades that the Sharks have made is, of course, the Hanzu signing. And you mentioned it earlier briefly. You know, we know what his skill set is, and we know what he brings to the table. Is he sort of the top line checker and defender that the Sharks have never really had?
Well, I think that's the role he'll be pegged into, playing on that third line. I think that there's probably still a missing piece on that third line. You would project Torrey Mitchell to play on that line with Hanzus. And then after that, there's kind of a question mark. Can Jamie McGinn get that spot back? He had it at brief points, lost it, went to the minors, and then actually performed reasonably well in some of the playoff games. That's going to be a question mark. He's probably more suited right now for the fourth line with Andrew Desjardins and Fraser McLaren seemingly being pegged in for that line. So the Hanzus is going to have a key role there, there's no question. They're looking for a shutdown offensive group as well as a shutdown defensive pair. And, I think they've taken care of that one to some degree with the Brent Burns trade, and now they have to put together those third and fourth lines to be more effective than they were. I mean, let's face it, it really came to a forefront in the Vancouver series when players like Max LaPierre and Rafi Torres and guys like that were just, completely outplaying the Sharks' third and fourth lines, outproducing them in most of the games in that series. And that was obviously another big area of concern, and it's been addressed. I think there's still probably one move to be made on that line. I'm just guessing it'll either come out of somebody who makes the team at camp out of Worcester, or there'll be a transaction.
Randy, you're the voice of the Sharks at Shark Voice on Twitter, so we have to ask you this question. Everybody wants to know, are the Sharks better after these two trades and after the Hanzus acquisition?
Well, again, and it goes back to last year when everybody said, are the Sharks better with Niemi than Nabokov? I think you have to wait till the playoffs. And did the Sharks end up being better with Niemi than Nabokov? Well, they were one win better, because the year before with Nabokov, they got to the conference final and were swept by Chicago, and this year they got to the conference final and lost in five games. So they have one additional playoff win under Niemi versus Nabokov, and I think the same applies here. It's going to take a while in the regular season for the group to blend. Obviously, quite a few changes, with a lot of people moving on and new people coming in. But, I like the blend from the standpoint that the people coming in are hungry. Mm-hmm. Brent Burns is hungry for playoff hockey. Marty Havlat is hungry for playoff hockey. Michael Hanzus, got to the first round with L.A., but he's got playoff experience in his past and wants to be in that spotlight. And, even a guy like Jim Vandermeer. I just think it all bodes well for the Sharks. They're bringing in people that have something to prove in the postseason, and the Sharks franchise once again has something to prove in the postseason. And I do think they're better on paper, but I'll feel a lot better when I see them for a few months.
Randy Hahn, play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks, thanks very much for joining us this evening on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Anytime, guys.
Take care, Randy. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Lots of hunger there in San Jose. Lots of hunger here in the studio as well.
Randy and the Sharks in town January 12th.
Yeah, there you go. Go see San Jose, top-flight NHL team. And it's really a bizarre year, because you're going to see these Southeastern Division teams for really only this year, and then you'll be back to seeing the teams that you would geographically think make the most sense. Let's head to commercial break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back. One final segment here on this Wednesday night. It's been a while since I've said Wednesday night.
Yeah, I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Nostalgic.
Yeah, going back to the future.
Quick, Drew. Just David Schultz wrote in his Globe and Mail article this afternoon and posts on AlleleCurve.com that the jerseys might not be for sale until September.
Well, that's fine. Season will start. Everybody will be ramped up for the first exhibition game, and they'll go out and buy the jerseys.
I couldn't hear less. I'm just passing that information
but
along.
That other information. Now, we don't have this fully confirmed, but somebody told us that when the team releases a new logo
yes.
and a new jersey, they have the first 10 days of merchandise sales, they get to keep all of it?
And then the rest goes into the pool.
And then the rest is divided up 30 ways evenly?
That's right.
So
they want to sell a lot of jerseys in those first 10 days.
So the Jets will want to sell all their jerseys in the first 10 days.
You honestly, you should wait till September. Nobody's at the lake. Everybody's in town. Everybody's back at school. Drew's taking his kids to school.
Yeah, I got my kids going to school with them. Exactly. That's humorous.
No, their first year of university.
I never even saw that coming. Oh, good. Let's all have a good laugh at my expense.
Remus, sup?
Right. Sup.
Sup tonight, Remus.
Remus,
your mic on?
Your
mic on?
First of all,
Rim?
Am I working here? I don't know.
I don't think so.
What is this mic? I feel like I'm in an echo.
Here, come use this mic.
No, I'll just go to
Drew's. Use Drew's.
Mike's not working.
I'm here because I got a bit of a beef. Ezra, you made some comments towards me, at the end of last week's show that I think need to be played. Tim hit the clip. So we're coming back in from the break. We got the $1 million man. All right, this is funny. I like the lot of free agent, a lot of money.
He's got a prize.
Everyone's got
free agent frenzy. There's everybody does have a price, and usually it's overpriced. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. One
and,
final.
And you know, we just played the Million Dollar Man music. We've got our Virgil. Remus is in the room.
Okay, cut it. Virgil, Ezra? Virgil?
You're taking it a little too seriously. It was just a joke. Obviously, you mean a lot more to us than Virgil. There's no beef. It was just a joke. Just like we all throw each other under the bus. Remus, I'm sorry. Come over here. Let's talk.
I don't know. As Virgil was the guy who got beat up in the ring when Million Dollar Man ran away.
Once again, you're taking it a little bit too seriously. It was just a joke. It didn't mean anything. Hopefully, we can still share a hotel room in the future like we did in St. Paul.
Well, that's a good segue into the hotel room, because we understand there was also a bit of a beef in the hotel room in Minneapolis, in St. Paul, when you guys were there for the NHL.
There was no beef. Remus audio taped me snoring.
Do we have the audio?
Do we have the audio?
Is this real?
This isn't real, is it?
This is not real.
Is this actually real?
Remus, confirm this is real.
Is this confirmed real?
I'll tell you what. You can call him Virgil all you want, but if you have to put up with that snoring, that is...
It's like a third engine.
I'll tell you what, Ezzy. Whoever, you might want to give Gary Lawless a call. I mean, Gary, he's got the sleep apnea, his CPAP machine. You might want to check into that. That's not healthy.
Okay, Reem, we're even now, right? You played a clip of me. You played a clip of me snoring. I called you Virgil. We're all good, right?
Oh my God!
I only record it because I was having trouble sleeping.
I can't imagine why you would be having trouble sleeping, sleeping next to that.
What
going
people
on.
Don't know is that Remus woke me up earlier. We had to get up at 7 a.m. to go get our media passes in St. Paul. We are actually staying in Minneapolis. Remus goes, "Ez, wake up!" I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." Remus goes, "I'm going to give you an elbow drop," and he elbow dropped me from the other bed. He almost bruised my ribs. Anyways, me and Remus are obviously going to take a bit of a time out here.
And I think you should consult a medical professional or something. That's not healthy.
I've always snored.
Well,
always.
That's not healthy. I mean, that might be sleep apnea, and that sleep apnea is no laughing matter.
I don't even know what that is.
Sleep apnea is...
When you stop breathing.
When you stop breathing while you're sleeping.
Wouldn't I be dead then?
No, you wake... I mean, you stop breathing for a second or something, and then you kick back into gear, but I mean...
Can't you just be a regular snorer?
No.
Like, can't you just snore and not have sleep apnea?
I think there's a point in time where snoring...
Don't you guys know the commercial? Snoring isn't sexy?
Yeah, you should need to look into a CPAP machine.
TMG snoring,
Richie.
Richie,
like we said last week, Drew's not a doctor, but he'll take a look.
Oh, boy. Wow, that's not healthy. You guys want to wrap up this this shenanigan-filled show? Wrap it up with some cheers and jeers?
Let's do it.
Okay, cheers and jeers.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stinks like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Michael Remus, I'll start with you. Cheers or jeers?
Oh, well, I wasn't really expecting that. And I'm going to cheer. I'm going to cheer GM Kevin Cheveldayoff. Great appearance on the show. Takes all the questions. He's making the right move so far. I applaud the job that he's been doing.
Okay, that seems straightforward and simple, but there you go. No argument with it there.
Call me off guard, Drew. I wasn't expecting you to pick me first.
Ooh, oh, do you have enough clip ready for Drew next week?
No. That was a one-time thing.
Drew chewing on a corned beef sandwich?
Yeah, you're very funny over there in the corner there, boy. Richard, you're up. Cheer, cheer.
I'm going to give a cheer to George McPhee. He got one of the top 10.
That was going to be my cheer.
One of the top 10 netminders in the National Hockey League for $1.5 million for 1 year. Forget the first-round draft pick that he flees from Colorado. That deal right there might take the Capitals from and also ran when it comes to the playoffs to the real deal and a serious threat to go all the way.
Ezra Ginsberg.
Can I do a double cheer?
No.
No.
We've done. I'm going to cheer George McPhee, too.
Ezzy.
We've done a double cheer before.
Nah.
Fine. I'm going to cheer the Ottawa Senators for signing Zenon Konopka just because it's Remus's favorite name.
Hey, he's great in faceoffs.
Great in faceoffs. Tough guy.
$700,000 on a one-year deal.
Great deal.
I'm pretty sure he played for the Ottawa 67s in junior.
I thought it was one of the better signings as it happens.
I'll check it.
Yep. Yeah, okay.
Zenon Konopka, Ottawa, Brian Murray. Drew, you're up.
We're just going to speak in just quarters of sentences, apparently, for the rest of the show. I'm going to wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer Ian White, local Manitoba boy, signed in Detroit. 2 years, $5.75 million, 2.875 average annual value. Sort of has bounced around a little bit, in his career a little bit. But I think this is a good landing spot for him in Detroit. I think he'll bring a lot of value to the Detroit Red Wings blue line there.
Fifth team now. He went from Toronto to Calgary to Carolina, San Jose, and now Detroit, Drew. Good puck mover and a guy you can slot in on the bottom, maybe a little bit of Rafalski time and maybe bottom two.
Richie, we only have 30 seconds here. But
actually about 5 minutes.
Oh, we do? Okay. Yeah. All right. Well,
really?
Is that right, Tim?
Can we do another round of cheers and jeers?
Yeah, like
four and a half.
Why are we cheering jeers so early?
You know what's interesting
about... judged.
What's interesting about that St. Louis Blues signing of Jamie Langenbrenner and Jason Arnott is they were originally traded for each other from New Jersey to Dallas. Now they're on the same team. So that is neat.
Acquired by Doug Armstrong, Arnott was.
That's right.
And traded by Armstrong, Langenbrenner was. Quickly, Drew.
Let me just recap the terms on those deals. 1 year, $2.5 million contracts for each player. So no real risk long term there. They were signed to lead that dressing room.
They were, Drew. I mean, there's been the youngsters there. They lose Eric Brewer, guys.
Yeah.
And so they have a lot of young players, whether it be Chris Stewart and Perron if he's healthy, and Alex Steen's like a veteran there now. So you have a lot of young players, obviously David Backes. So after losing Kariya and Tkachuk and Brewer, you really want to fill in with some veteran guys who've won cups. Arnott and Langenbrenner have both done that. Back to Konopka, he played in Ottawa for 4 years and grew up on Niagara on the Lake, so it's a nice fit.
Great signing.
Yeah. I'm surprised he would go for some...
I don't mind... You know what, Drew, what you find, and you've noticed this, and we spoke about this, after that rush, July 1st, 2nd, 3rd, you get some pretty fair deals.
Yeah. I mean, you're almost better off as a general manager, I think, to turn your phone off on July 1st. Because
Brian Burke did himself a favor by going overseas.
Yeah. Did you think it was fair that he got criticized in that column?
I don't have a problem with it. It's an opinion. Deal with it. I mean, I think it did probably have a bearing on maybe them signing some free agents, but again, it probably helped them in the long run. And for whatever reason, Burke won't agree to these contracts that are valid as per the NHL and NHLPA. You can stand on that principle
He's
for only
screaming
so long.
About, screaming about the Richards contract again, right?
You know what, Brian? These are the rules. Rules are put in place. They've obviously been amended post Kovalchuk. Deal with it.
Rules are made to be broken.
If you want a player, don't not sign him because it's not within your particular rules. Sorry, Brian. If you're not going to sign him, it's because you didn't sign him. Don't blame it on the system.
I'll tell you what. They should find rules to prevent Toronto from making signings like Tim Connolly. 2 years, $9.5 million, 4.75 average annual value.
Again, two-year deal, though, Drew.
Yeah, it's fine.
But when he's injured and Lombardi might not be back, then you're wondering where they are. They're right back to where they were last year.
Exactly, and that's...
We didn't talk about that quickly. We have a second. Cody Franzen.
Yeah.
That deal was basically for Cody Franzen because Lombardi's sketchy with the concussions.
Yeah.
Cody Franzen is an excellent puck mover, a good shot from the point, a nice passer. Not a good skater, and so he needs to be put in positions to succeed. On the power play, he can. Beside Phaneuf, he can. Based on being mashed up against other teams' best players, especially fast players, he cannot. So it's going to be interesting to see the way Ron Wilson employs him.
And Richie, Poile took some heat for not keeping Franzen because they thought that would be a good bargaining chip with Weber.
They had to get Lombardi off the books. That was their problem there. They had to get the Lombardi. They had to get out from under the Lombardi contract.
David Poile very rarely makes a mistake.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by it. When the guy's not a good skater, the talent level is a very steep drop-off. like once he takes a bit of a step back, if he can't make up with it with his skating, I think he takes a step back.
You know, even that, Drew, I mean, is he a top four defenseman? Probably not. He can play top 4 minutes if power play is included, but he can play top four even strength minutes. And if he can, he's at most a four, and yeah, you're probably going to be holding a forward back to make sure he's protected.
Exactly right. So it's no big loss. I'm not too worried about it. That's it for this Wednesday evening, our first Wednesday evening show of the summer. We'll be on again next Wednesday. Big thank yous today to Kevin Cheveldayoff, general manager of the Winnipeg Jets. Big thank you to Mike Greenlay. He's the color analyst on Minnesota Wild TV broadcasts. A big thank you to Randy Hahn. He's the play-by-play voice of the San Jose Sharks. In case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes, subscribe, and get it sent to your iPod each and every week.